Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. If you've seen any romantic comedy that ends with a wedding, say in the past 20 years or so, you may have noticed a very familiar archetype. We're talking about the gay best friend sidekick. You know, the one with the fabulous taste and the zesty snark, but not much of a romantic life that we can see, or at least any kind of life, really, beyond the stifling confines of the main couple's storyline. Well, playwright Joshua Harmon sees that typical character as something of a court jester, very reductive and one-dimensional. So in his new play, Harmon makes the gay best friend the center of the story. That play is called Significant Other, and it's going to Broadway in February, but first, Speakeasy Stage Company is staging the play in Boston until October 8th, and playwright Joshua Harmon joins us from New York to talk about it. Joshua Harmon, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. So I kind of gave a boiled-down version of your inspiration for Significant Other. What's the true story here? What inspired you to write the play?
I started working on the play on a residency in Florida, actually, where I had to write 9 very short scenes that took place. They wound up taking place between the protagonist, Jordan Berman, and his therapist, talking about this guy he was obsessed with at work. And it inspired me to write a whole play about that. And I thought I was going to write an epic play about unrequited love. And I didn't quite do that. But that's where I started.
Well, so tell us more then about Jordan, who's the center of the story.
Sure. Jordan Berman is in his late 20s. He is a gay Jewish New Yorker, and he has these 3 incredibly close friends. And over the course of the play, they start out and they're a solid group. And over the course of the play, one by one, his female friends fall in love and find partners and sort of spin away from him. And so by the end, he is on his own.
Well, let's listen to a little bit from the play here. Again, it's called Significant Other. It's at Speakeasy Stage Company. And we have a scene where the character Jordan is speaking to his friend Vanessa, the second in the group of 3 women that sort of surround him who's gotten engaged. Here's the clip.
I have someone I want you to meet at the wedding.
Is he the only other gay guy coming? Because if he's the only other gay guy coming, I can almost guarantee I'm not interested.
He's the only other gay guy coming.
I knew it!
tell us a bit about this scene and about the interactions that you wrote, the relationships that you write in the play.
Sure. That scene is so she is, as you said, the second of 3 friends, and that's at her bachelorette party. And so over the course of the play, he does go to 3 bachelorette parties and 3 weddings. And the first one, he's kind of thrilled. It's new and fun. By the third, his feelings have shifted. But this is the middle one, and his friend Vanessa, who's talking to him, fell in love at their last friend's wedding. And so I think her thought is that she can help him fall in love at hers.
I'm wondering, you know, I introduced this segment with a sort of tongue-in-cheek description of a very familiar, popular archetype about the gay best friend, right? And I'm wondering, what sort of challenge did you face in writing Significant Other while sort of acknowledging that that archetype exists, but obviously you're trying to go beyond that and being sure that you didn't write anything that once again fell into those same sort of tropes and traps?
Yeah, I think I thought of it almost cinematically, where it was like taking the camera, and usually it would be focused on the woman at the center of a story, especially a wedding story, stories about weddings. They're usually about the bride. And so I just sort of shifted the camera so that he was at the center of it, and so that instead of when he walks off camera after he's come on for 2 lines, you follow him and you see where he goes and you meet his grandmother and you see him go on dates and you see him home alone trying to figure out what to do with his life. So it was really just about shifting the focus so that we got to see him and in forcing people to look at that character, I think you get a much more 3-dimensional picture of what that who that person is.
Absolutely. I mean, and isn't that one of the most interesting or exciting things about any play, that no matter how small a character it's sometimes it's hard not to imagine what their life is, as you say, after the camera pans away from them. I mean, in the case of Jordan, one of the key things that we learn about him is that he's lonely. And why pick loneliness as something that's a major experience of his life?
I think loneliness is incredibly universal, and it comes at different moments. And you know, even if you fall in love and get married, like, you know, if you don't get divorced, then probably one of you will die first. So, like, somebody's going to be lonely again. So it's not something that, like, is a stage or phase of life that you ever fully pass through. It's something that I think comes in moments. I think, you know, empty nesters, when their kids go off to school, feel lonely in a new way. So there's something very universal about that condition, and I believe deeply in trying to be specific when you're examining something. So in this case, it is that universal condition as seen through this very specific particular person's point of view.
Is there something even more specific that it's, you know, Jordan's point of view is in part informed by his sexuality?
You know, I think that was a given in the play, so that, you know, I think a lot of times when a play or a story is about somebody gay, you know, it's about them coming out, or, you know, a couple, you know, few decades ago, it would be about AIDS. And this was the fact of his being gay is central to who he is. But that's not dealing with what that means isn't the meat of the story. It's just another facet of his life. But I do think that, you know, for gay men today, there is something unknown about how to forge a path forward. It's not totally dissimilar to, I think, what women were going through in the 70s and 80s, where, you know, it's like, how do you work and fall in love and raise a family and do all these things? There aren't millions of role models to show you that path. And I think similarly, gay men today, there isn't a long history of out couples who have, you know, figured it out and, you know, have three generations of that going back. I think it's something that people are trying to figure out on their own and forging brave new territory.
Oh, that's interesting. Tell me more about that, because now, I mean, you've also written this play. I take your point that Jordan, the character Jordan, his sexuality isn't the beating heart of the play. I mean, I take your point on there, but you've also written the play at a time where, you know, now the Supreme Court has ruled that that same-sex marriage is a constitutional right in this country. I mean, does that add even more uncertainty in terms of what you're saying, that there haven't historically been patterns or stories of marital relationships in the gay community that a character like Jordan could sort of rely on or lean back on for support?
I think so. I mean, I would have a hard time actually coming up with a bunch of great stories or characters where it's about, you know, gay couples who are married. I think, you know, the fact of his having these three female friends who really support him, part of, I think, the way in which they show their support for him is that they want him to get married. They want him to have that right. It's assumed it will happen, and they believe in that for him. And that is their, I think, genuine effort to show their tolerance or love even for him. Without ever questioning whether that's the right thing for Jordan, whether that's the path he should be on, whether marriage, which was this thing that all these people fought for, was actually the thing we wanted. You know, uh-huh. It's been imposed a little bit, and that is also tricky to navigate. To think, well, now I have this right. Do I stop and say, did I want this right?
Right. Yeah. No, it's a really interesting take and perspective there. And it also makes me wonder, to get back to, you know, the friendships that Jordan has with these three women. I mean, I think there's been a lot of writing and thinking recently about how these intense friendships and networks between, you know, young people, what effect they do have about relationship choices, you know, romantic relationship choices that people make later. I mean, my producer, Emma Jean, pointed me to an article in the New York Times that was written earlier this year that said that sometimes these intense kind of friendships come with later in life marriages, because the friendships themselves really raise the bar in terms of what other kinds of relationships one wants to have in life. Have you found that to be true?
I think that's absolutely true. You know, if you look back even just in the 60s, I think the average age of marriage was between 20 and 22. Now it's, I think, around 27 to 29. And I'm sure in urban areas, it's even later. So you're talking about people now who went to college together, who go and get apartments together. They live together. They're essentially family. And if you think about a 20-year-old or a 22-year-old getting married and all of the things one expects to get from a marriage, the intimacy, the support, the love, it's not like people don't need those things today. And they're delaying that. They might be delaying marriage, but they still need all of the things they would have gotten from marriage. And so they're getting that from friendships. And those friendships are taking you through, you know, sometimes through your 30s. And those, the word friend almost sounds too casual for, I think, how intense and meaningful those relationships can be.
Right. I mean, it's almost as if we need a new word for that kind of relationship, right?
You kind of do, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so the play is on at the Speakeasy Stage Company here in Boston until October 8th. So people listening to this, go see it here in Boston. But Joshua, I did want to ask you that it's going to Broadway. Significant Other is going to Broadway in February. How do you feel about that?
Insane. You know, it's very odd. There are maybe three or four new plays that go to Broadway every year now. It's a very rare experience for any writer to have. And I honestly had hoped as I was coming up to be produced off Broadway. I never thought about Broadway. It wasn't even on the table. So I'm still just processing it, but it's very exciting. And I hope people come see the play.
Well, I'm sure they will. And congratulations for making it to Broadway. But again, Significant Other is on at the Speakeasy Stage Company here in Boston through October 8th. So you have a chance to see it now before it goes to New York. And it's written by...
And it's a really excellent production. I saw it last weekend and I was very impressed.
I mean, talk about raising the bar. They do a pretty good job at raising the bar with,
yes,
with productions there. It's written by... Significant Other is written by Joshua Harmon, and he joined us today from New York. Joshua, thank you so much for joining us. It was great to talk with you.
It was great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
And we've got more information about the Speakeasy Stage Company production of Significant Other at our website, radioboston.org. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.